Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. It is October 19th, 2021, and let's see what's on the docket. First, Brian Laundrie is the new Sasquatch. He is nowhere and yet everywhere. Alex Murdoch is home again. Jussie Smollett, remember him? Yeah, well, he tried to throw a Hail Mary so he doesn't have to go to trial. We'll talk about that. Derek Chauvin has a new appellate counsel. A judge gets in trouble, and is he getting some special treatment? And a firebug gets off easy. Maybe because of his family's connections? Perhaps. Elijah McClain family settles with the Aurora Police Department. And then finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel, the channel where an actual practicing criminal defense attorney explains the law, the facts, and the procedure, not only to old cases, but current true crime cases. Thanks for watching. Welcome to the show. Now, as always, please don't forget to hit that subscribe button if you haven't done so already. Hit that little bell so they receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content like we're doing tonight. It's Tuesday. We have our Tuesday night live show. And then immediately following that is, of course, our Patreon show. And if you can't watch us on YouTube or Facebook, remember, you can always listen to this episode and previous Crime Talk episodes going back to the beginning on any of your favorite podcasting apps. So don't forget to look for us. Crime Talk with Scott Reich. All right, first on the docket, that more Brian Laundrie information. As you all know, he is the new Sasquatch. He is nowhere but yet everywhere. Well, he's still missing, and obviously he's been named a person of interest in the death of Gabby Petito. Petito was obviously 22 and declared missing on September 11th, 10 days after not returning from a cross-country tour of the national parks with Brian Laundrie. A lot has come out in the last few weeks about Laundrie's character from people who know him for a little bit. Now, a man who used to work with Brian Laundrie said that although he did not see him be mean or abusive to his now-deceased former fiancé, Gabby Petito, he did appear to be jealous if he spotted her talking to other men. He would come over and do the boyfriend thing, put his arm around her, give her a kiss, very possessive, according to Michael Livingston, who said he worked with Brian Laundrie in 2017 and 2018. Now, okay, that's rather interesting, but how are these people coming forward? Really? I mean, if you have something of some real interest, that would be great. If you have something of something that's going to be permitted into evidence, that would be also relevant. But something that took place in 2017, 2018, sorry, ladies and gentlemen, that is not going to pass muster under Rule 401. Okay, what does that go to prove? What element of the offense, if there were ever murder charges, what element does that go to prove as it relates to the death of Gabby Petito? Absolutely nothing. So Livingston added he never came across as the kind of person that would be the killing type. Yeah, like he knows what the killing type is. Really? But he did have the tendency to be, I don't want to say the wrong thing and make him sound worse than he already is. He was a kind of guy who would get pissed off pretty quick, is what Livingston said. And he said he would thought that Brian would act like a weirdo sometimes and used to go on this big yoga nut. Brian would often say, I got to worry about my Zen. But Livingston added that he was a good employee who knew how to talk to people and make people happy. Well, there you go. Okay, more, and I hate to do this, ladies and gentlemen, but I think this is important to show how so many people can speculate but have no real evidence. And then, fortunately, the police say, no, this isn't true. Well, here it is. So investigators found the bodies of Crystal Turner and Kylan Schulte, who were found fatally shot in a campsite in Moab. Now, police haven't named any suspects in the double homicide and have said that investigators haven't found a connection between the death of the two women and Gabby Petito. There's a private investigator. His name is Jason Jensen, And he's now saying that a closer look should be taken to see if there's a connection between Petito's death and the death of the couple camping in Utah. Now, the Grand County Sheriff, Stephen White, confirmed in a statement that the Petito case is not related to the double homicides of Kylan and Crystal. Now, as you may recall, Kylan and Crystal described a creepy guy bothering them while camping, and that was the last thing that friends had heard from them. Jensen says that Kylan and Crystal were very down-to-earth people, and they would not call just anyone creepy. Unfortunately, the couple did not take any pictures of the creepy guy, but Jensen says that until the authorities can prove that Brian Laundrie was not in the area at the time of the couple's killing, then he shouldn't be ruled out. Now, this is what I really don't like, ladies and gentlemen, but we do this to illustrate how somebody can throw something out there and it can really muddy the water. So now we have Brian Laundrie, who is obviously a person of interest, and he should be a person of interest, but he hasn't been charged with the death of Gabby Petito. But now we have people basically saying that he's killing other people because he may have been within hundreds of miles in the state at the time. Ladies and gentlemen, that is why we like to stick to facts, but sometimes you have to show absurdity to demonstrate absurdity. Now, there are lots of channels out there that they will go off on every little tangent that you could possibly do, but no way is supported by facts in any way. Don't you think if the police thought that Brian Laundrie had something to do with another homicide, they would be investigating that as well? They've probably looked into it and determined, people that have more of the facts, that he is not a relevant subject in that matter. So we brought that to you just to show, because sometimes you have to demonstrate absurdity with absurdity. To say this person can't be ruled out because he was in the area? Okay, well, how about everybody that lived in town? They were there too, right? Come on. It just shows you, ladies and gentlemen, and that's where we like to keep it to the facts, real information, okay? Well, there's another woman by the name of Rose Davis. She apparently describes herself as a close friend of Gabby Petito, and she was on a TikTok live stream this weekend and stated that Brian and Gabby did not actually live in Christopher and Roberta Laundrie's Northport, Florida house. Davis said the couple lived in a condo that the parents paid for them. Now, David previously came out saying that her and Petito made plans to meet the couple on their trip somewhere, possibly in Yellowstone, for Davis's birthday on August 29th. She said that Petito was going to call her on her birthday, but she never called. Davis explains that she was not originally concerned about the missed birthday call because she knew things didn't always go as planned, particularly on a road trip. I think that's the understatement of the year. Right. Now, remember the Wyoming coroner involved in the Gabby Petito case? Well, he made a statement that he has been, quote, forced, unquote, to resign from a local hospital because he used his personal computer at work. And in a Facebook post, Dr. Brent Blue wrote that he was resigning from the St. John's Health, which is located in Jackson, Wyoming, because he had used his personal computer while working at the medical facility. Blue wrote that he would continue practicing medicine on a limited basis, although he offered few details about any future plans. The resignation has come just days after Blue released the autopsy result for Gabby Petito and appeared on the national media outlets talking about the case. Now, Blue was elected the county coroner in 2014 and won re-election in 2018, according to the newspaper. Now, his current term expired in January of 2023. Now, obviously, you can be fired for just about any reason, but when you're the coroner, that seems a little odd that you would resign that position. But he's resigning from the hospital in this particular case, and I can't recall anyone ever being fired for using a personal computer at work. I mean, your phone is a personal computer at work. So sounds like there's a little more something there than what the good doctor is describing. And if charges are ever filed, I assure you, the defense will be subpoenaing those records to see if there's something in there regarding potential acts of moral turpitude, something that goes to one's credibility for sure. All right, now the latest possible sighting of Brian Laundrie. was taken by a home surveillance camera on the outskirts of the owner's property in Denillon, Florida, which is about 3 hours north of Northport. Now, the strange video shows a man pedaling along a county road on an old rickety bike. The man appears to be trying to pedal fast, and then the bike wobbles and forces the man off the bike. Take a look at this video. Now, also notable, it seems that the man is wearing a large backpack and has on heavy, dark clothing. The video has been submitted by the owner to the FBI. You let me know if you think that this is Brian Laundry or just another guy who's going to be napping and getting his door kicked in by the United States Marshals. Let me know what you think in the comments. Next on the docket, Alex Murdoch. He's home again. That's right. And guess what happened? Well, Alex Murdoch was denied bond Tuesday after facing new charges tied to the embezzling of millions of dollars related to the death of his housekeeper, Gloria Satterfield. Now, police arrested Murdoch in Orlando, Florida on Thursday and charged him with two felony counts of obtaining property by false pretenses, which carry a maximum sentence of 10 years in prison. Now, Murdoch, 53, was wearing a mask and wearing a jail jumpsuit, did not speak during the hearing. And during the bond hearing, the prosecutor, Creighton Waters, said Murdoch had promised to keep Satterfield's sons financially secure after her death by paying them financial proceeds from a life insurance policy. But instead, Waters said, Murdoch set up the sons with another attorney, Corey Fleming, a close friend and former college roommate, to represent the family's estate. The son maintains that they were unaware of the pair's friendship. Waters said that Fleming helped to divert millions of dollars to an account set up by Murdoch for a fake company called Forge, which was named after a legitimate financial consulting company unaffiliated with the case in any way. Well, Circuit Court Judge Clifton Newman ordered Murdoch to undergo a psychiatric evaluation following concerns he presents a potential danger to himself and the community. What does that really mean? Well, there's probably been some talk of suicidal ideations, and so they're going to make sure he's not going to hurt himself so that we can try him, prosecute him, get to prison, and then he'll hurt himself. Or all the people that he helped prosecute and his family helped prosecute over the years will then hurt Mr. Murdoch for themselves. Now, as you may recall, Mr. Murdoch had already been out on another $20,000 personal recognizance bond in September and was allowed to continue treatment at an out-of-state drug detox center for an alleged opioid addiction. Now, we certainly wish Mr. Murdoch the best in his battle with his opioid addiction, and we will obviously give him the presumption of innocence. However, we've said it once, we'll say it again. Yes, the wheels are coming off of Alex Murdoch's life. And obviously, the true victims here are obviously everyone that's been allegedly scammed through his fraudulent conduct, and obviously his deceased wife and deceased son. But even worse is his living son, who has basically had his whole world turned upside down through no fault of his own. He's probably found out that he has no money, that his family has no money, and anything that they have is going to be taken away by creditors who basically are entitled to money from Alex Murdoch. So it's getting ugly, but it just shows you, ladies and gentlemen, when somebody does in fact commit crime, the real victims, you know, are not the ones that show up in court. The ones that suffer are not the ones going to prison. If Alex Murdoch goes to prison, he'll be getting, you know, three hots and a cot, three meals, place to live. Basically, all his troubles will go away. He just has to kill a little time. It's the family that's going to be left behind to clean up his mess and all the repercussions that come with that. Those are truly the victims. And obviously, in any financial crime, people somehow think it's not as serious as violent crime. But when people take and steal all of your money, you literally sometimes have to wonder, am I going to be able to recover from this? So Alex Murdoch will give you the presumption of innocence, but man, not looking good for you. We'll see how things turn out. All right, next on the docket, Jesse Smollett. Remember him? Yeah, that's right. Jesse Smollett, the actor who allegedly falsely claimed he was the victim of a racist and homophobic hate crime, will stand trial beginning next month after a Chicago judge denied his request to dismiss the case over false police reports. Now, Smollett was charged with felony disorderly conduct back in February of 2019 for allegedly making a false report to the Chicago police in January of 2019, claiming he had been attacked by two men who shouted racial and homophobic slurs at him and wrapped a rope around his neck in, well, tied in a noose as well. He told the police that the assault occurred in the middle of a frigid Chicago night while he was out picking up a Subway sandwich. Well, police investigators, they allege the incident, which Smollett claimed, happened in the upscale neighborhood of Streetville, but could not find any video evidence of the assault. Officers ultimately began investigating whether Smollett paid brothers Ola and Abel Asudario to stage an attack after first investigating the brothers as persons of interest. Now, Smollett allegedly orchestrated the fake hate crime to promote his career and paid the two men $3,500 to help. Smollett's attorneys argued that forcing the 39-year-old former Empire actor into court would be a violation of his rights, as he has already completed community service and given up a $10,000 bond under a previous deal to drop the charges with the Cook County District Attorney. Well, Judge James Lynn said he would not intervene in this case, which is being led by a special prosecutor appointed by another judge. Jury selection is scheduled to begin right after Thanksgiving on November 29th. Now, Smollett's felony disorderly conduct charge was dropped by the Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox's office. Now, however, a judge later assigned a special prosecutor to the case who in February 2020 charged the disgraced actor with six new counts of disorderly conduct. Smollett has pled not guilty to all of the charges. Quick point here. You know, we always mention in today's world that video cameras are everywhere, and that's how a lot of people get caught. Well, they can also prove that nothing happened during a particular time frame, just like they're doing in Mr. Smollett's case. He got a smoking good deal because of who he knew, and the district attorney, Kim Fox, gave him a great deal. But I think the fact that he was so arrogant about it and the fact that he literally skated on the whole thing after politically connected people tried to intervene for Mr. Smollett, I think most people simply found that offensive, right? One of the fundamental principles of our judicial system is that's why Lady Justice is blindfolded, is because it's not supposed to care. The justice system is not supposed to care about who you are, what your status in life is, who your daddy is, who you know. It's simply about the facts of the case. Did the act occur, and did the defendant do it? That's it. Everything else shouldn't matter unless until you get to sentencing, but charges shouldn't go away just because of your status. All right, Derek Chauvin. As you may recall, we brought you news last week that the judge denied his request to have appellate counsel at free, basically the public defender. Well, there's hope for Mr. Chauvin. Obviously, everyone knows he was convicted of murdering George Floyd, and he's finally obtained lawyers for his appeal. Now, according to filings, William F. Mormon will represent Chauvin as he challenges his April conviction. And Chauvin was obviously convicted back in May for the 2020 death of George Floyd. We won't go through all the facts, but we all know how it turned out. Chauvin had asked for a new trial in May after the verdict, but Judge Cahill denied that request in June. Chauvin was sentenced to more than 22 years in prison. And earlier this month, the Minnesota Supreme Court upheld the Office of the Minnesota Appellate Public Defender's Office denial of Chauvin's request for representation. Chauvin claimed he didn't have the funds to cover the cost of a private attorney. He stated that his only assets are two retirement accounts, and Chauvin said in the filing that he would face significant penalty for early access to those retirement funds. Now, in September, Chauvin applied in a request called Informus Pauperis, which would have, he would have received transcripts and fees free of cost. Cahill, the judge, initially granted that request before walking it back the next day, apparently deciding that Chauvin did have the means to pay for his own attorney. So Mormon's firm, Mormon, Cardle, and Erickson, has experience in high-profile legal battles. One lawyer represented a group challenging the results of the 2020 presidential election in Wisconsin, claiming integrity issues. Don't think that went anywhere there. Eric Cardle sued then Vice President Pence while acting as special counsel for the Amistad Project of the Thomas More Society, only to end up being referred by a federal judge to a grievance committee. That certainly didn't go well. And another attorney at the firm, Greg Erickson, represents healthcare workers in medical freedom cases over the coronavirus vaccine. Now, Mormon was recently co-counsel on a case challenging a local ordinance that forbade a woman from photographing children near a Bloomington, Minnesota park and mosque. We'll see how that turns out. I don't think Derek Chauvin's going to get much relief. I was a little surprised that the court did not grant him informus pauperis status, as he is in custody. That's quite normal. What that suggests is that the retirement funds from his 20-plus years as being a police officer must be rather significant. Now, I understand there's going to be significant tax penalties, and let's face it, taxes suck, but it's your freedom there, Mr. Chauvin. Take the penalty, pay the attorney. Somehow I think that's probably what happened. Next on the docket, a Colorado judge gets in trouble, but is he getting some special treatment? Well, Judge Mark Thompson, and he presided over courts in Summit County, Clear Creek, Eagle, and Lake County. And if you're not familiar with those are basically the towns that have all the ski resorts here in Colorado. Well, he was removed from his position as the chief judge after a felony menacing charge was filed this last Saturday. And that's all according to the Colorado Judicial Branch. Now, Thompson was charged with a single count of felony menacing with a real or simulated weapon after an investigation by the Colorado Bureau of Investigations did the investigation in the case, obviously. Now, the tricky thing is that there's court records, but guess what? The case has been suppressed from the public, and the court documents that are expected to detail the accusations against Thomas were, well, they're still not available. And that was kind of a big deal here in Colorado for a while. And I'm a firm believer that it's a public record. You used to be able to walk into any clerk's office and say, I would like to get this file. Here's the case number. Here's my name. Here's my ID. So I bring it back. Here it is. I should take a look at it. When we went to electronic, judges like to suppress a lot of cases so nobody could get access to it. Well, isn't that convenient when it's your case, let alone you're a judge? Now, I don't know what the judge did. I don't think I've ever appeared in front of this judge. Frankly, I wish him well. But we live in a free and open society, and well, particularly when our judges get in trouble, we should probably be able to see what's taking place. That's why we can't talk about the specifics. We can only mention what's the facts of the charge. We'll have to wait and see. Now, Thompson is currently on planned paid time, and he is not immediately clear when he will return. My guess is he will not be returned anytime soon. And I don't know what will happen. Obviously, felony menacing is, in fact, a felony. It could be very tough to maintain a law license, let alone a judgeship, if one was, in fact, convicted of that crime. I have seen judges convicted of DUIs in county court judges, and, you know, they kind of bury them off in restraining order courts somewhere. This will be an interesting case to watch. And like I said, I don't know anything about this judge. I have no axe to grind. I don't understand why everybody thinks that court records somehow need to be sealed, particularly when it's someone of a public figure in the sense of a judge holding a position of authority that has ruled and sentenced people on very similar cases like the facts alleged, or at least the charges alleged. We'll wait and see. Next on the docket, a firebug gets a pretty light sentence. Could it be because of his family relationship? Well, last Thursday, a Grand County judge, and that's Grand County, once again, ski community, but ranchers and things like that up in the mountains here in Colorado. Well, the district court judge sentenced a man with a history of burning slash piles on his property to 10 days in jail. Well, you would think that that would be significant, but let's go on. Judge Mary Hoke sentenced Christopher Linsmeyer, 68, on one count of felony attempted arson and one count of misdemeanor attempted arson giving him the jail time along with 2 years unsupervised probation and 80 hours of community service. What is most compelling to the court here is that there was a stage two fire ban. There was to be no open burning, and Mr. Linsmeyer violated that ban, the judge said. I think the shock of jail may help with this situation. So who is Christopher Linsmeyer, and why do we care about this particular story? Well, Linsmeyer is the husband of Denver District Attorney Beth McCann. That's right, the elected District Attorney Beth McCann. Now, a statement from McCann on Thursday says that Linsmeyer and his family acknowledged the distress his actions put on the community. The family put out a statement apologizing for the stress, anger, and hurt that Linsmeyer may have put on the local community, and that he acknowledges that he exercised extremely poor judgment and has accepted responsibility by pleading guilty to his actions that October day. He hopes to demonstrate his remorse by performing useful public service to the community. Now, you have to remember, Linsmeyer was charged with 12 counts of felony arson and 12 counts of misdemeanor arson for having a dozen slash piles on his property, with four actively burning on October 27th, an incident that sparked an emergency response to his home in Gorewood, which is neighbors outside of Kremlin, Colorado. Now, didn't that statement by the DA sound like it was written by a defense attorney? Oh my gosh, yes it did. Oh, isn't it just a little, I don't know, kind of funny, just a little bit, when the hunters become the hunted? Boy, I wonder if they had a few sleepless nights at night. Probably so. Well, this incident revolved around, at the time in Grand County, was under a stage two fire ban, with the East Troublesome and the Williams Fork fires smoldering under a fresh blanket of snow. Linsmeyer was not on his property when emergency crews responded, and unable to get a truck through the snow, firefighters had to use surrounding snow to extinguish the flames. Several of Linsmeyer's neighbors gave statements asking the court for the harshest penalty allowed under the plea agreement, noting that the previous consequences have not been enough to curb Linsmeyer's illegal burning. Up to now, the laws appeared to not apply to him. That's right, that's according to neighbor Lori Pope. The lack of serious consequences up to this point have allowed him to become bold in his fire setting. And under Linsmeyer's plea agreement, he can have the charges dismissed after October 4th of 2023 through a deferred judgment as long as he completes all the terms of the plea agreement and doesn't commit any new crime. Now, if Linsmeyer doesn't complete the terms of the agreement, he risks 1 to 3 years in prison following the sentence. Now, basically what that is a deferred judgment. He gets a split deal. The misdemeanor will always remain on his record. The felony will drop off, assuming he does everything that he is supposed to do. Pretty good deal for a guy who's been in trouble before. Don't usually get the deferred when you've been in trouble before for the same action. You got charged with a felony because you continued to engage in the same action. Just saying, I don't know. There's some of these deals, if they were my client, I wish I could get them, but it seems like, you know, geez. I guess the next time in Denver, I'll just have to say, it's not like he's setting fire to the state of Colorado or anything. Geez. Give my guy a break. I don't know. Okay, a little sarcasm there. Don't get all offended, everybody. Next, Elijah McClain. Remember that tragic situation? Well, the attorneys for Shanine McClain, Elijah McClain's mother, announced that the family has reached a settlement with the city of Aurora. I told you way back when that Aurora better get the checkbook out, and you better be prepared to write a lot of zeros behind whatever number that may be. As you may recall, McClain's son, Elijah McClain, died after an altercation with the Aurora police officers and Aurora Fire back in August of 2019. Now, McClain was walking home from a convenience store when somebody called 911 saying they saw someone acting suspiciously. Police arrived, made contact, and arrested McClain moments after talking with him. Paramedics injected him with ketamine in order to subdue him. McClain repeatedly told officers he was on his way home and didn't mean anyone any harm. He was not armed. McClain suffered a heart event on the way to the hospital and was taken off life support days later. The attorneys for Elijah's mother said that they had reached an unspecified settlement that that would resolve all claims raised in her federal civil rights lawsuit. Now, the lawyer for Elijah's father released this statement on behalf of Mosley, saying nothing will bring back his son Elijah, who was loved dearly, but he is hopeful that the settlement with Aurora and the criminal charges against the officers and medics who killed Elijah will allow his family and the community to begin to heal. As you may recall, we brought this to you in September. The Colorado State Attorney General's office found a pattern of racially biased policing and use of excessive force in Aurora. The Attorney General is now recommending changes to policing, training, record keeping, and hiring, which at an entry level is done by the city's Civil Service Commission. Now, several officers and paramedics have been charged criminally as it related to the death of Elijah McClain. Now, I'm telling you, I have talked to people that believe police officers can do no wrong ever. And they've watched the video with Elijah McClain. We've put it up before. And they all agree this was wrong. This kid was literally walking home. He did nothing wrong. He has some special needs. But, you know, this kid played the violin. I think he was, you know, I don't want to speak out of school, but he was autistic. And this kid was doing nothing wrong. And this was a classic example of what took place. And if anyone needed any input about the Aurora Police Department, heck, all they had to do was call me because I could tell you. And I have a friend that's a cop out there. But I'm telling you, every case that I have ever handled from the Aurora Police Department, there's always something that just seems very questionable about it, all the way from homicides to simple routine felonies where they find items in the cars. All right, finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Investigators say that Terry Majors called 911 Thursday afternoon seeking medical assistance. But once inside a Sunstar ambulance, Majors allegedly removed his clothes and began pleasuring himself. At some point at the ambulance travel to St. Petersburg, Majors asked for an ice pack, which he then proceeded to fold and pleasure himself with while en route to the hospital. Majors was recently released from jail after serving a one-year sentence on felony drug charges. He was busted for selling crack cocaine to an undercover cop. He was charged with exposure of sexual organs, a misdemeanor, and booked into the county lockup. He was freed Friday morning on his own recognizance. So there you have it. Mr. Majors, you are a dumb criminal contestant of the day. What can I say? I guess it's a natural thing, right? But to do it in an ambulance with others around, not so natural. Mr. Majors, you're a dumb criminal contestant of the day. And if you win, that's right, you're going to get some cool Crime Talk swag. Wish you luck. All right, that's all we have for today. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.